Welcome, members, to the Tax Committee. We have six bills, and so we're going to try to get moving here. Representative Solberg's first, but he's not here, so Representative Cornish has agreed to start off with his bill. So I'm going to go ahead then and move House File 434, and Representative Cornish, welcome to the committee.
Well, Madam Chair, member, thank you. Is this one of these bills that will be held over for possible inclusion, Madam Chair?
Yes, it will.
Okay. With that, Madam Chair and members, House File 434 has a counterpart. Senator Rosen is carrying in the Senate, Senate File 0207. This exempts hydrogen used as a fuel and internal combustion engine or fuel cell from sales tax. Probably most of you have heard about the resurgence of hydrogen and the research that's going on. Everybody probably knows that we're probably 10 years away from seeing an actual vehicles on the street, and even more before they come commonplace. But what we're trying to do with bills like this is make a hospitable environment for the future for hydrogen cells and hydrogen research. And so what this would do would be to exempt this hydrogen from sales tax. Hydrogen is one of the fastest growing, or pretty fast anyway, as far as research dollars. Of Chevron and Ford, Daimler Chrysler are all doing research in hydrogen fueled vehicles and hydrogen production. And the state of Minnesota has already started trying to make an environment ready for hydrogen research with the policy we have in Minnesota statute, which is 216B013, that states that the goal of the state of Minnesota is to move to hydrogen as an increasing source of energy for its electric power, heating, and transportation needs. We also define it as a clean fuel, which would make it make available the paths through incentives or tax incentives or policies to make a more hydrogen-friendly place in Minnesota for this type of research. The even though it's a long way off, we think the way you get it started in states like they have in the past, up to I think five states already. I think Idaho, Maryland, Nevada, Fairmont. Bob Gunther would be glad to hear that. Vermont, and Washington already have an exemption for sales tax, and others are considering for property tax for industries that want to develop hydrogen research. So with that, Madam Chair and members, I could go into about several pages how hydrogen is produced, because I don't even understand, but I'm sure you're not ready for that. But any questions from your committee?
Members, does anyone have a question for Representative Cornish on House File 434? Representative Cornish, this bill seems familiar to me. Do you know if Representative Hornstein has offered the same bill in the past?
If Representative Hornstein what?
Has offered the same bill in the past. Is that familiar to you?
I've seen the bill that has introduced before in previous years, but I didn't see his name on the list.
Just curious. I'm trying to... not understanding how the science of this works either. I don't know if you have a testifier who wants to explain that to us, or if not, we'll just take committee questions and lay the bill over for possible inclusion.
I don't think anybody showed up.
Well, Representative Cornerstone, this is exactly how it should be done in taxes. It's a 3-minute hearing. You're good to go. And members, we do not have a quorum, so I'm going to officially call the meeting to order. I'm going to officially move House File 434 and then lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Cornish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did forget to mention that there is an accounting out that shows no negligible impact for taxes on there.
Yes, members, there is a revenue estimate in your folders, and the general fund impact is negligible. Thank you again, Representative Cornish.
Thank you.
With that, members, we're going to go to Representative Solberg, if he's ready. I see he's in the back of the room. If he's not ready, well, you can jump around, too.
When you say we're ready, we're ready.
Okay, then, Representative Solberg, would someone like to move House, Representative Solberg, you are a member of this committee.
How about that?
Representative Solberg moves House File 114. Welcome.
For possible inclusion. Madam Chair and members, this is a bill that would kind of extend the sales tax exclusion for 800 backbone system that we've had in other parts of the state to Itasca County. Itasca County is a county that has some different terrain, We'd love to have all of you come up there, and we don't want you to get sick. But when and if you should happen to have a sickness when you're up in the woods, we want the Sheriff's Department to be able to communicate with you. And the Itasca County has taken the bold step of developing this backbone system for communications. And I have with me Sheriff McGurry to explain the bill. And on the back of the bill summary, you can see the area that we're talking about. So, Madam Chair, I'd like to have Sheriff McGurry give some testimony.
Thank you. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Itasca County is developing a 800 megahertz radio system, which will eventually tie into the state radio system when the state rolls the system out. We're doing this with our dollars and our funding. Our county board is bonding, actually, for this project to make it happen. Whereas in the other areas that have developed a system, it's been developed by the state of Minnesota and built out by the state of Minnesota. So as Representative Silberg said, we're kind of taking a bull by the horns and developing this system ahead of the state rollout system. So with that said, we're asking to have a sales tax exemption for the cost of the backbone radio system, which has been afforded to other parts of the state, primarily the metropolitan area, St. Cloud, Rochester, and those affected counties down in that area. So we're asking to be added on to the existing bill, which is State Statute 297.8.70, Subdivision 8, and we're just asking that the legislation be added, that that portion of the system that is located in Itasca County, so that we can have a sales tax exemption for the backbone of our system as well.
Madam Chair, I think that's straightforward enough.
Thank you for that. And Mr. Michael, would you mind, or Ms. Dalton, the sheriff referenced that this similar sales tax treatment has benefited other parts of the state, and that's right. Can you just give members a little history on who's had to pay on that and who hasn't?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think the map on the back of the bill summary is fairly self-explanatory. Since the state started building the system, they said it in the metropolitan area. It was originally granted to 10 counties in the metropolitan area, and then was expanded, which was phase one of the system, and phase two. And then when phase three was added, which was the Rochester area and part of central Minnesota, those counties were also added. So it's been added piecemeal.
Thank you. Other comments, Representative Solberg?
Madam Chair, appreciate any consideration.
Madam Chair.
Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Solberg, would this be, we've been doing this, and it seems like every 2 years we come forward with another one. Would this be something that we should just be doing on a statewide basis so that we could advance this system? What I see happening here is that by the time this thing gets built out on the full statewide level at the pace we're going, the whole system's going to be obsolete on the front side, isn't it?
Well, Madam Chair, I can't answer the second part of your question. I don't know. But obviously there's a need for communications, and I've been around for the entire history of the 800 megahertz system, and we were supposed to build the backbone and others be able to communicate. I do think it's important for us to have that backbone throughout the state if at all possible. And even though Itasca County took a kind of a leap of faith to do that, as I understand it, they were in a position where they just weren't able to communicate, particularly in some of the remote areas. So it would be kind of foolish for them to upgrade that old system, and then whenever we get around to it, for them to go into the 800 megahertz system. So they have taken that leap of faith. I would like to see probably a statewide system. I don't know as if other counties are interested in that particular, and how the revenue estimates would be if you did that this year.
Well, I think what you're doing is fine. I don't have a problem with it, and I think we need to do it. And I think we have other areas in the state with the same concerns that your county has. So it's just a point of reference.
And Madam Chair, and I don't know which ones next parts of the state are ready for this either. I can't tell you that. I know that there's a plan by public safety to do this.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Albert, and thank you, Representative Simpson. I agree with your view on that. Are there other questions, members? If not, are there any other testifiers, either for or against? With that, I will lay over House File 114 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you for joining us. And now we'll go to House File 929, Representative Rood. And members, as she's coming down, and I think she's got some testifiers with her, I think the League of Minnesota Cities may be interested in this bill as well. But members, as you recall, we heard Representative De La Forest, Representative Hillstrom, and Representative Erickson's bills on the capital equipment upfront exemption, and there's a component of that in this bill, although this is a bill specifically for the city of Minnetonka. It is something that, like Representative Simpson's last comments, has some statewide issue, and we could approach it that way as well. Is there a member who would like to move House File 929 for Representative Rood? Representative Tom, who is House File 929 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Welcome, Representative Rood.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I am bringing House File 929 forward on behalf of one of the communities that I represent, the city of Minnetonka. Minnetonka is seeking a sales tax refund on the purchase of certain capital equipment that was used to construct a water treatment plant. And with that, Madam Chair, I do have some testifiers who would like to speak on behalf of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Rood. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm John Gunyu, the Minnetonka City Manager, and Merrill King, our Finance Director, is also here today. Just briefly, what this bill is it would provide a $140,000 refund to the City of Minnetonka for the sales taxes we paid on capital equipment for a water treatment plant that we constructed. We were aware that this tax had to be paid prior to filing for a refund, but we were not aware of the fact that we had to have set up a purchasing agent agreement with the contractor prior to executing the contract. When we applied for the refund, revenue told us that we had to have done that. We could not amend the contract at that point, and so we had to continue to pay the sales tax. I'd just like to emphasize that this is current policy. In other words, it's no change in current policy. It really remedies our oversight in setting up the right legal steps. We do understand from talking to revenue that this is not uncommon. Apparently, there is a fair amount of confusion about the process.
Thank you. Mr. Gunyu and Representative Rood, did you want to introduce your other testifier as well?
Madam Chair, my name is Merrill King. I'm the Finance Director for the City of Minnetonka.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Did you have testimony at this time or here for questions?
I'm here for added questions and
okay.
Details.
Okay. Members, are there questions at this point on the bill? If not, I do think it's instructive for Mr. Michael, and I guess Ms. Dalton, to also talk a little bit about this question in this bill. I think the League of Minnesota Cities is quite interested in this legislation as well, because they're interested in this sort of problem recurring throughout the state. Minnetonka is the example before us here today, but we do also have an amendment drafted that would sort of fix this problem statewide, and we can get to that, and I can move that, we can pass that out, and we can think about that as a committee. But I think if Ms. Dalton could sort of explain the how did the city have to structure this to get the refund, and was it really just sort of a confusing piece of did they get the right kind of purchasing agent, and or did they have the right kind of contract, and why are they not qualifying for this refund technically?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think it's helpful if we divide this refund into two pieces. One is the construction materials for the actual building, and one is the capital equipment. Now, if the city had actually purchased the capital equipment that went into the facility themselves directly, they would have been able to apply for the exemption under the capital equipment exemption that exists in current law. The construction materials are separate. They would not have been exempt, and they would need this language regardless if they wanted a sales tax exemption on the construction materials. This has been a problem basically with all turnkey projects, both in the public sector and the private sector. If somebody is building a manufacturing facility and they want to do it as a turnkey project where they build the building, they put all the equipment in, the capital equipment does not get the exemption because the way current capital equipment exemption law is written is the equipment must be purchased and used by the purchaser. And so that's actually one of the things that has caused us to write a lot of, it's probably the impetus behind a lot of the construction exemptions that have actually been passed in laws in the recent year, is not simply the construction exemption itself, but they want to do a turnkey project and they want to make sure that they get their capital equipment purchase exempt, which they cannot have if the equipment is purchased and installed by the contractor.
Interesting. Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this question is probably for Ms. Dalton or Mr. Michael. This being a already constructed facility, do we have a history, or have we had a history of going back and buying these back afterwards, or aren't we doing these on a forward basis?
Ms. Dalton.
Representative Simpson, generally speaking, we do these on a forward basis. It is not totally unheard of for us to provide an exemption retroactively, but it's not the common practice.
And members, I think Representative Rood wouldn't be here if it couldn't be done retroactively, then her city wouldn't have this problem. But I think one of the policy issues for all of us to think about is the language that confuses the cities as they assume they're going to get this refund for the capital equipment exemption, and then they can't get it because they maybe set up the purchasing situation a little bit differently. But I do have a question, Ms. Dalton. I'm trying to recall, Representative Davids had something similar for Chatfield. Was that the sales tax construction exemption, do you recall?
Madam Chair, Chatfield was a construction and equipment exemption,
okay.
And it was, I believe, prospective. Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Michael pointed out, and he's correct, that's wastewater treatment, and therefore it wouldn't have qualified for the capital equipment exemption because it's not manufacturing.
Thank you. Representative Laveley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I just heard part of what I was confused about, too. I just wanted to ask Ms. Dalton, you know, what we had discussed last week about the capital equipment exemption and getting the refund and all that, and if we did something to fix that situation where people didn't have to apply for the refund and they just got the exemption up front, if that applies here. And I think you just said no. Am I right?
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, I don't think that's what I said, but I'll try it again. If a government entity is essentially manufacturing something, in this case they're manufacturing drinking water, they can get the capital equipment exemption, same as any other manufacturer, but again, they would have to buy their equipment themselves, the sales tax would be paid up front, and then they would apply for the refund. But if their capital equipment was bought by their contractor who built the entire project, then they do not qualify for the capital equipment refund.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. Then what we were talking about last week with the, what we had all that testimony from the manufacturers, if we fix that problem, I mean, I'm assuming it's a problem for the cities as well, having to pay it up front and then go through that application process to get it back. That might, if we fix that, that might help this as well.
Well, I'm going to go to Ms. Dalton. I think they have a kind of a triple problem going here. I was going to say a double, but I think it would help part of it, but it would not help another part, which is how they designed when they got a contractor, and who was the purchaser. They had to technically both buy it and use it, and it's how they chose to do their contracting. But I think it's instructive for members to think about there's a couple pieces of bad tax policy in my mind going on, not in this bill, that this bill is correcting. Representative De La Forest brought forward the let's not have local units of government pay sales tax, period, bill, which we all kind of bipartisanly thought was a good idea. So in a perfect world, they shouldn't even be paying a tax on this stuff in the first place, and they are. But then you've got this other issue where for the capital exemption part, for the capital, they should get this refund, but because they didn't structure by the letter of the law how they let the bid, basically, they're not qualifying for it. So they've got a number of things going on here. I don't want to mischaracterize, but they're nodding, so I'm thinking I'm okay here. But I do think it might be helpful, if it's all right with Representative Rue, for Mr. Carlson from the League of Minnesota Cities to join us, because I think he's brought the attention to me that, you know, many cities may be similarly situated, and they would just like clarification so this really doesn't happen again. And I think if it's all right with Representative Rude, I'm going to ask the pages to hand out the amendment, and I'm going to move the H0929A1 amendment just to get it before the committee so that Mr. Carlson can talk to about that. This would be the amendment that would deal with this problem that Representative Rude has, but fix it for the whole state if we wanted to do this in the omnibus tax bill. So I think it's helpful for us to not think about Minnetonka, but just think about all the cities across the state who could find themselves in this situation. So with that, Mr. Carlson, are you ready? And if members have the amendment? Not quite.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. And let me say at the outset, I don't want to muck up Representative Rude's bill here at all. That's not my intention. 2 years ago, we had actually worked on some language with the House Tax Chair, Ron Abrams, on this very issue, because we recognized a deficiency in state statute. And when I saw Representative Rude's bill go in, I thought this was a good opportunity to discuss this broader issue. Let me say to the committee that this is not just a city issue. There are businesses that may be caught in the same boat. If you don't structure your contract in purchasing this capital equipment in the right way, you may also not qualify for a refund of the capital equipment just because you haven't followed the exact letter of the law. The language you see before you today, I believe, is consistent with the language we had drafted 2 years ago with Representative Abrams, and again, I think this would help clarify for cities, but also, I would guess, for other businesses, that in fact you could secure the capital equipment refund even if you did not structure your upfront purchase of that capital equipment in accordance with all the rules from the Department of Revenue. Madam Chair, I'll stand for questions.
Are there questions for Mr. Carlson, members? Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair, the amendment, and I apologize for not being fully informed on this, but does this clarify that the city is eligible for a refund? Is that what it does?
Okay. Representative Solberg, I'm going to get that nod on the record here, Ms. Dalton.
I was going to do the same.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, this would allow the refund for a local government or for a private sector who allowed their contractor to do the purchasing of the capital equipment.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that's a similar question to what I have, and maybe this is better directed to Ms. Dalton. Who else then could claim this sales tax exemption? Because under current statute, which I'll acknowledge is faulty in some elements, it seems like it does tailor the benefit to Minnesota businesses on the private side or Minnesota local units of government. But if the person doing the purchase and receiving the benefit no longer is the purchaser or the lessee of the equipment, who else is going to achieve the benefit?
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, it's not going to extend who the benefit goes to, because the capital equipment still has to be used in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically all this is doing is it's changing how you have to contract the purchase and installation of that equipment to qualify.
Thank you.
Representative Leland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Dalton, I just wanted to ask, too, I think I remember when we discussed this issue last week that that wholesalers of this capital equipment don't get the exemption. I mean, it's the middleman is supposed to have to pay the tax, if I recall. And I just wonder if this maybe unintentionally takes out that provision, or maybe I'm not remembering this right at all.
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, if a contractor purchases capital equipment and then installs it in a building, he would be paying the sales tax and nobody under current law, and because he is not the user of the capital equipment, nobody qualifies for the refund right now. Essentially, the loser is really the manufacturer, because he doesn't get his capital equipment exemption because he didn't make the purchase. Anybody who is wholesaling capital equipment, you know, purchasing it or manufacturing it and then selling it to somebody to be installed someplace else, he has an exemption under the sales for resale exemption, so that's not really an issue. This would only be the contractors.
Another question, Representative? No. Okay. Are there other questions? Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question I would have would, with the effective date being June 30th of 07, how would that affect companies that are out there or cities that are out there right now looking? Or would you want to change that date to 06?
Ms. Dalton, can you comment? Are there other instances that we should be concerned about this date, other cities that might be in the same situation right now?
Madam Chair, Representative Simpson, I do not know if there are other cities or other manufacturing industries that are in this situation right now. Because it is a refund, it's not terribly difficult for us to put a retroactive date on this, because they're already going to have to apply for a refund anyhow. Normally, we try to avoid retroactive dates, because then you've got the whole hassle of who paid the tax and how do you apply for the refund and things like that. But that mechanism's already in place. So it's the big problem with, of course, if you put a retroactive effective date is it's going to increase the cost of the bill.
Representative Simpson.
Well, I think, thank you, Madam Chair. I think where I was coming from is we heard a lot of testimony last week from a lot of people that are sitting on these things for long periods of time. And I'm just wondering if we're going to do this or we're to make this correction, would this help alleviate that time frame? That's my question.
Madam Chair, Representative Simpson, that actually won't have anything to do with the time frame. This is actually going to make some businesses who might not otherwise qualify, or local governments who might not otherwise qualify on a past project. You know, if you put a retroactive effective date, it would now make them qualify. But it won't change the mechanism for anyone who currently qualifies.
Thank you. Other questions? If not, I'm going to lay over then. Representative Rue, did you have anything else on this bill?
No, thank you, ma'am.
Then I will lay over House File 929 for possible inclusion as amended in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members can do
the vote. With the permission of the committee, I'd like to go back here in time and take a vote on the, I apologize, members, 80929A1 amendment. This is the amendment brought that we heard Mr. Carlson testify on. And members, I wanted to add it to Representative Rude's bill just so we can have it as alternatives as we go through the omnibus tax. So I think it gets at what Representative Simpson is raising. Is it just for this city? Is it for more? And so, members, I then will move the amendment. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries, and I will lay over House File 929. Thank you, Representative Rude. Now we will move to Representative Coonan, House File 968. Welcome. Representative Coonan moves House File 968 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Representative Coonan.
Thank you, Chairman Chesky and members. This bill, as you can see in the bill summary, is pretty short and to the point, at least in words. It's a little more complicated than that, and you'll hear that when some testifiers come forward. But what it does is it exempts sales tax and use tax for grain bins and fencing. I'm going to comment a little bit on the fencing first. There was a farmer from Montevideo who thought he was going to be here today, and it turns out he couldn't make it. But he wanted to point out and make sure the committee understood from his view that most of his farming operation is livestock, and he pays the sales tax on fencing, the fencing required so his cattle can harvest his pasture, his neighbor buys a $180,000 combine to harvest his crops, and the sales tax is exempt. So he wanted to point out that he thought that it was also a fairness issue. The bill also deals with grain bins, but I would like to have Mr. L. Ray Anderson, a businessman from Montevideo, come up and testify. This will show how this bill not only affects farmers, but also businessmen. And Mr. Anderson can tell you a little bit about his business and what happened to him.
Welcome to the Tax Committee, Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. I've been selling grain dryers and grain handling equipment since 1980. In 1986, I incorporated my company. My company sells automated grain handling equipment, wet holding tanks, grain dryers, cooling bins, and storage facilities in the farm market primarily. In 1986, I incorporated the business. I visited the regional tax office in Marshall, went through what we did with our equipment, how we paid our taxes, how we collected taxes, and verified with them that our automated systems would be taxable at the same rate as the grain dryer. And so since that time, then, that is the way we've handled our sales and use taxes. In 2003, we got a notice from the State of Minnesota Revenue Department that our sales and use tax procedures were to be audited, which was fine, and we brought them into our store and gave them access to all our books. That was in March of 2003. After five or six trips in and out of our store, several calls to the State of Minnesota questioning the way we were doing things and the way things were being processed, the state finally determined that we were not properly doing the tax situation on grain bins. The dryers were fine, all the related equipment was fine, even though they told me in Marshall that if a product we sell is being used in the processing of a grain commodity, it therefore then is taxable at the same rate as the grain dryer. The audit determined that the grain bins should have been taxable and that we should have been collecting taxes. The problem was is that farmers are tax exempt, so we can't collect from the farmer. Since that period of time and going through several hoops with the State of Minnesota, my lawyer and myself, a couple weeks ago, we sat at the Supreme Court and listened to the Commissioner of Revenue's lawyer argue their side and mine argue ours. I came to the conclusion that parts of our grain bins are not taxable because they are wet holding tanks. If a grain bin is used as a grain dryer, it's not taxable. But it was determined that we should have been charging a use tax to the supplier because we buy it from out of state, which when we tried to find out how we did it, we could not get any direction as to how we were supposed to do it. It was also determined that we were a contractor, and therefore that's where the use tax came from, even though we do have farmers that will buy bins and related equipment and take them home and construct them themselves. And so there's just a lot of confusion as to how this is done. I canvassed competitors in the last 2-3 years. About maybe 10 to 15% say they do try to use it or try to pay it on a use tax. The rest of them don't. So the complication comes in there then. If we are out and we are going to contract a job, we bid the job, there can be a difference of $500 to $3,000 on each grain structure. If they're not collecting it, we are, that we wouldn't be competitive. And so the end result of it is that depending on how the state rules, the Supreme Court rules, my company could be faced with $100,000 to $125,000 liability in use tax that we have not collected, that we cannot pass on and collect to our customers. And so that is where it is.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. That's a problem. I don't know, Representative Coonan, if you have another testifier, but I think I'm not sure if the department has someone here, too, who would like to talk about this issue at all, but I think it's instructive for members to think about how complicated this is for folks. And Representative Coonan, does your bill exempt all of the components if this would pass going forward for the grain bins? I heard Mr. Anderson say parts would be taxable and parts wouldn't. How does your bill address that?
That's my understanding, but maybe if Ms. Dalton would be willing to comment.
Madam Chair, that would be my understanding, too, although I am not a farmer.
Thank you, Ms. Dalton. And Mr. Anderson, yes.
I believe it was determined that the components that accessorize the grain bin, they would would consider tax exempt, but it was the shell and the structure itself that was really the main issue. And then it got into how was it being used, determined whether it was or wasn't. So I think it's just the structure, as I understand it.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Flynn. The fencing materials is the only question I have. I mean, the grain bins and the drying systems, that is completely understandable, but the fencing materials that's listed in the bill is maybe one of the parts I'm not sure. That's not necessarily, unless they're talking about fencing off a grain yard, which again is possible, but that's my only question to the bill. And Madam Chair, I'm Representative Coonan.
Representative Zeller, do you mean is to what extent the fencing is included? Or I think as far as my understanding in the bill, it's actually a separate issue. We're talking about exempting fencing, and then we're talking about exempting grain bins.
Okay. Is
Did that answer your question, Representative Zellers? Thank you. Other questions for Representative Coonan? Members, are there members in the audience who want to testify for or against? See, the Farmers Union is here. I don't know if they have something to say. Welcome to the committee.
Yes, Madam Chair, Tom Peterson, Director of Government Relations of the Minnesota Farmers Union, and just wanted to be on record as supporting this bill. This is, as you just heard, there's a lot of confusion a lot of times on what gets charged sales tax. There's a long list of agricultural sales tax uses and exemptions. And when we talk to our members, those are the two biggies, grain bins and fencing. And you can even see on the bill, they're kind of even laid out that way, in the statute, the grain bins and fencing. The grain bins, we talk to our farmers, it helps control costs when you can keep the grain on the farm. It gives you more options, especially now with the new emerging biofuels. You can sell to your elevator, you can sell the value added, but it gives you a lot more control. It also gives you don't have to pay the storage, which can run 2 to 4 cents a bushel per month in storage. And so that is a positive. It helps control transportation costs and other things too. To build a grain bin, roughly, a lot of times people tell us it's about anywhere from $1 to $1.50 per bushel. So if you're building a 10,000 bushel grain bin, it'd be about $10,000 to $12,000, somewhere in there. Just a couple of thoughts on that. The other thing I always say too on the grain bins, sometimes it gets down to when we're talking to the department about whether it's permanent versus a fixed cost on the farm. I can tell you, two farms that I bought, I've actually dismantled the grain bins and sold them, and they were older bins. But a lot of times the bins can be more portable too. And so a lot of times we're looking at the bin is not taxable is what we're asking for. The cement slab underneath would be taxable perhaps, but the actual bin itself is what kind of we're looking at. And then fencing too is another one, and we're talking about fencing for livestock. As we're fencing livestock, we see a big increase right now in a lot of grass-fed operations where we're fencing off a lot of organic production, a lot of different where we're using steel posts, steel wire, wood, a lot of those things. But those are what our farmers tell us that would really help them is to exempt those. And I appreciate your consideration. And in the interest of time, we also speak today the Farm Bureau, corn growers, wheat growers, soybean growers, barley growers all support this legislation also. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Representative Coonan? Other thoughts? Other testifiers?
As far as I know, that's it for testifiers. Other than that, I would just like the committee to give this serious consideration as we move through the process.
Thank you, Representative Coonan. Other questions from members? Representative Solver.
I'm sure we have a revenue estimate on the whole bill. Do we have that separated between the two choices? What it is for fencing, how much for green bins? As you can see, I'm learning revenue estimates instead of fiscal notes.
And Representative Solberg, I'm looking for mine, actually. Oh, thank you.
So 2 and 2.3 and going out 2.4 in 2011.
Yes. Well, the department's here. Yes. Welcome.
Chair, my name is Greg Heck, and I'm with the department.
Thank you.
I did sit in that argument at the Supreme Court, and it did tie significance to the fact that it mentions milking systems, it doesn't mention grain drying systems. If the legislative intent is to apply to the complete grain drying system, I would suggest on line 1.13, after milking systems, it does say grain drying systems. This would clearly resolve the problem if you're talking about purchasing a grain bin in abstract, but this is the same problem as you previously discussed on capital equipment that's installed by a contractor under a lump sum, because construction contract includes both supplying and installing the contract or the grain bin. I think you'd want to treat them the same way you treat the barn cleaners, the milking systems, and specifically say grain drying systems to make sure the whole system was exempt. Otherwise, I think you're going to run into problems about where the contractor's installing grain bin also.
Coonan, if you're interested in that, if you could give Ms. Dalton a minute, she could probably put that author's amendment together for you. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also, just for discussion while you're doing that, it's been pointed out by our expert that it would be more clear, instead of adding fencing material here, to put it into 297A.69 sub 4 paren 3 and then take out farm survey and put in livestock. Right now, this could mean that if I had a fairly nice hobby farm and just grew some vegetables out there that I take some of to the farmer's market, I could put a really fancy fence around that because there's no limit on it to what it is. And right now you have it, as Ms. Dalton pointed out, farm survey, and that could be just changed to livestock in the section that I mentioned.
Thank you for that, Representative Moore. Did you catch all that, Representative Coonan?
I caught the tail end of
it. You're not trying to help those metro people just plant some vegetables, are you? I didn't think so. And if Ms. Dalton, when she gets past the first idea from revenue here, maybe we can take a look at that. So while she is working, Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to comment on both of the suggestions. I think Representative Mulray's suggestion is a good one. If we make it to livestock fencing, that would really clear that part. However, I'm going to maybe beg to differ a bit with the Department of Revenue. Grain bins are standing all over the place that have nothing to do with grain dryers. In fact, most of the time, most grain dryers are totally a separate piece of equipment. There is such a thing as a grain drying bin that is a type of a dryer. But grain bins typically are not, can be associated with a drying system, but typically they are not part of a drying system. That would not clear it up. In other words, if we said grain drying systems, to me, I can put grain bins on my farm and not have a dryer. Mm. And so that would not clear that, Madam Chair.
Yeah, right. Representative Coonan.
On that issue of the grain drying system, I would be okay with on line 1.13, where it says grain dryers, changing that to grain drying systems, but I'd want grain bins left in there.
Okay, I'm watching Representative Coonan nodding, and it looks like Mr. Heck is, and Representative Demmer, does that, looks like, would that address your concern?
Madam Chair, yes. My point is, I think, and Representative Kuhn is touching on the same thing. We can't eliminate the word grain bins if we make grain drying systems. That would not necessarily include the grain bin. But I think the grain drying systems probably is a good suggestion because there might be other components related to the grain dryer, because there's all kinds of ideas about how to do grain dryers, and that would take care of that. But the grain bins would have to be separately listed in this situation.
Thank you, Representative Demmer. I'm now looking at an amendment, Representative Kuhn, that Ms. Dalton has handed me. I'm not sure now that it has not.
That's exactly what they just said.
That's it? Okay. I'm going to go ahead and read this amendment then. If there are no other thoughts on the bin versus dryer component of Representative Kuhn's bill, and that would be that Representative Kuhn moves to amend House Bill 968 as follows. Page 1, line 13, strike the word dryers and insert grain drying systems. Does that work for you, Representative Kuhn and Demmer and for the department?
Yes.
Okay, if that works, then all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried. Thank you.
And
so, Representative Kohler.
To feel comfortable, does the grain drying system then include the big LP tank? If I ran a natural gas line out to my farm, if it was having to be close to one, would it include the cost of a natural gas line? Is that all part of a system?
Representative Demmer.
Well, Madam Chair, I'll take a stab at that if you want my interpretation, Representative Solberg. I would say probably not, because you can have an LP a tank and or a it depends. If you had a separate LP tank that's specific for your dryer only, then I would say yes. If you have an LP tank that's connected to your barn or to your machine shed or your machine shop, I would say no, because then you have it there anyway. A natural gas line coming to a farm may be used for a grain dryer, but also may be used for natural gas for your shop and home, and then I would say no. That'd be my interpretation, Madam Chair, and Representative Solberg, if that's helpful at all.
Well, Madam Chair, I think that's good to have on the record when the Department of Finance makes that decision. That's probably a good idea.
Thank you, Representative Solberg. Representative Wolfschlager. Representative Wolfschlager, do you know what an LP tank is? For those who don't, I don't know.
Chair Winchesky, I do. I also know if you go to fruit farm, even if you're a metro woman and you look like a farmer, they'll let you buy fencing material tax-free. So go to fruit farm and look like me. My question is...
they're afraid to tell you all that.
My question was on, there was a conversation earlier about adding livestock to the fencing material.
Ms. Dalton, are you working on that one? Do you need a little more time? Because we can go to another question if you do.
Madam Chair, I'm moving the fencing out of the machinery and into the actual equipment and fencing exemption, so that's going to take me just a little bit more time.
And Representative Wolfschlager, is that what you're hoping to do? I know Representative Simpson and Mullery are interested in this as well. Does that solve the issue?
Well, Madam Chair, I raised the issue to Ms. Dalton about the hobby farmer that could put in a fancy fence, and she immediately knew where it should go. And
okay.
What
Representative to Simpson?
Yeah, that's correct. That it will be for farm use only.
Okay. Representative Demmer.
Madam Chair, if I could just comment, Representative Wolfschlager made a comment about looking like a farmer, and actually one of the testifiers said the same thing about farmers being exempt from sales tax, and Madam Chair, I would beg to differ with that interpretation. I don't think farmers are exempt from sales taxes. Farm materials are exempt from sales tax. I'll give you an example, Madam Chair. In my business, I'm in the auto parts business, and we have oil filters that can be used on farm machinery, and we have oil filters, the same exact oil filter can be used on a truck. And it's been our interpretation in selling that a farmer can buy that oil filter, and it's not sales tax exempt because it can be used in a truck. Whereas if an oil filter is used only on a piece of farm equipment, it is sales tax exempt. And I can be a farmer or I can be a city slicker and buy that oil filter. If the only thing can be used on is a piece of farm equipment, it's exempt. But because a farmer buys an oil filter for his car or for his truck, it is not sales tax exempt, Madam Chair. That's been our interpretation in my business. It gets to be a little dicey sometimes trying to apply that, especially explaining it to a farmer when he comes in and thinks because he's a farmer he's exempt. But that's been our interpretation in my business as we try to explore with the Department of Revenue how to interpret that. And it's not the individual that's exempt. It's the item and what it's used for, regardless of who buys it.
This is very interesting. And Representative Earhart is next. And I hope you're not giving Representative Earhart an exemption when he shows up. Representative Earhart?
Well, Madam Chair, I'm thinking we're getting close every day to pay those folks to live out there on those farms.
That wasn't a question, was it, Representative Earhart? Other comments or questions for Representative Coonan? I think we're sort of stalling here now to see if we can't get an amendment to address the situation that's been raised by a few members. Are there other questions, or are you ready, Ms. Dalton? No, she's not.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Coonan.
I think Representative Dammer and Representative Wolfhager bring up some good points in the confusion on what's exempt and what isn't. And with the fencing, I know that there are some farm stores that do it both ways and for farmers. So, I mean, there's a lot of confusion there.
You know, Representative Coonan, Representative Rukavina has given me that look. I know that look. And that look says, why don't we fix this in the omnibus tax, though? And so why don't we do that, members, if that's okay? So, Representative Coonan, if you're okay with that, and members who've raised it, I mean, we will commit to that if this makes it in, we'll get this fixed on the fencing and get that clear. And with that, if everybody's okay with that, I'm going to go ahead and lay over House File 968. Thank you, Representative Coonan. Appreciate that. And now we're going to move to Representative Kahn with the fund bill that Representative Rukavina has laid out. And that is, Representative Rukavina, do you want to move this bill for Representative Kahn? I'm sure you do. I'm on this bill. You don't want to move it? Who would like to move the bill for Representative Kahn? No, this is cosmetic surgery.
No.
At request.
It's going to be noted in the minutes here that Representative Rukavina, by request, has moved Representative Kahn's House File 1027. Welcome to the committee, Representative Kahn.
Well, Madam Chairman, since I haven't, thank you very much. This is one of my few appearances before this committee, and since I haven't been following the committee, I would venture to guess that this is one of the few bills that you've had before your committee that's asking to raise taxes instead of asking for another exemption from taxes. So since you eventually are going to have to get some kind of balance, I thought you might appreciate having someone trying to fill in the opposite side for you. And House File 1027 is a bill relating to taxation. It extends the tax to certain cosmetic procedures. And I think the bill lays out pretty much what they are. You also have in your packets, I think, the statement from the Department of Revenue as to the what the amount of money to be raised is likely. And let me say, to begin with, let me repeat the second phrase, is that the tax would not apply to reconstructive surgery or dentistry performed because of congenital defects, development abnormalities, trauma, infection, tumors, or disease, including procedures to improve function or to give a more normal appearance. So we're not going to tax some of the medically necessary things that people have called me about. I only thought this latest handout, this actually was much more impressive when I looked at it. This is from the latest edition of Minneapolis St. Paul, and I picked it up and started reading it, and before I even got to the table of contents, I think, there were these five full-page ads on dental enhancement. So that, more than anything else, made me think this is really big business. And I haven't looked at every other magazine that's around or every other newspaper. But one other state has done this, the state of New Jersey. And one of the things the revenue estimates that we actually, the same ones, if we just take the revenue that was raised in New Jersey and we normalize it to the size of the state, we get just about the same revenue that the Department of Revenue forecasts. So I think it's a fairly simple bill. I think that's all. I guess I'd rather answer questions. I don't know if there's anything else I can say.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. Representative Rukavina.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative, first of all, I appreciate the fact that you put the lines in there at the end. What I guess would be necessary, cousin, certainly, but, you know, really, I mean, let's take a comparison here between me and you're short and homely and I sell those cars in life and tall and handsome. You know.
And you can pay sales.
Yeah. But I can't afford it. You said, and who knows, I might need it for just, you know, for a confidence builder. And on the other hand, but I mean, so you can put a guess there, but I'm curious because I don't understand a lot of these terms. What would be a line 421? Give me an example of a cosmetic substitution.
Representative Kahn.
There's a very interesting article, I think, in the New York Times this weekend, which talked about the incredible business that is being done in Los Angeles this week for the Academy Awards events. And apparently because of the necessity, because now of the close-in television, the necessity for people to make sure that their eyelids, their lips, and all those things are absolutely perfect. And there was one of the things that it said in this article was a warning, kind of a warning to the people who are going to be appearing at the Academy Awards preventions and seen in a strap with evening gowns and things like that, is to be very sure to do these things well in advance, because even in the most gentle of procedures, there is bruising and there are traces that are left and so forth. So that's... yes, there are lots of parts of the body which are subject to such things.
That's
but I'm not an expert. I'm obviously not an expert on this. On this issue, and I think one of the things, you know, perhaps we can call the person from the Department of Revenue who gave us this estimate to tell how they arrived at their adjusted estimates, how they got the elective cosmetic surgery. That's based on data from the American Society of Plastic Surgeons, and so I think we can get, so that's an example of what, and I imagine that if this becomes law, there will probably be some full list of procedure by procedure as what's allowed and what isn't allowed. I doubt. But this is what I'm suggesting be put into statute. I would leave it to the wisdom of the committee to work out the more specific details.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. Representative Maury.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the first question is, could this be then, for some people, written off as a business expense? And my second one is, I'm seeing what Representative Kahn put out and says, Barb and her horse Dandy, smiles enhanced by Dr. Norling. Does it apply to horses too?
Representative Kahn, I think Ms. Dalton, maybe you want to take a shot. I don't know, maybe Mr. Michael on. Could this become a legitimate business deduction?
I think under certain circumstances it could be. Of course, there'd be a question whether it's capital or ordinary.
Thank you. Representative Adkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kahn, does this product apply to braces, orthodontics?
No. I specifically believe the language that is hard to find it. The language in the end, that's reconstructive surgery or dentistry performed on abnormal structures caused by related to congenital defects, developmental abnormalities. All of those things are the things that are corrected by braces. And I think over by, there's very good medical evidence that a good bite is distinctly necessary for health. I think most of the, I assume, again, you could have orthodontists come and tell you what the difference is. I don't think most of their work is done for cosmetic reasons.
Representative Atkins.
And that highlights the point I wanted to make, Representative Town, is that the language in 2, I think, provides a significant loophole for all of number 1, which is you provide an exception to congenital defects for procedures to deal with congenital defects that result in a more normal appearance. My issue that I would raise would be, I don't necessarily think this is a good idea, but the more normal appearance is really in the eye of the beholder. And so, for example, if I have something on my face, a mole or something that I want to have removed, that would give more normal appearance to me if I had that removed. That would be an exception at the site. Or if I had, I don't know, some other, if I looked like him, my buddy, if I wanted to be 6 inches larger so I could be more nice. But the issue is, what is a normal appearance?
Yeah.
I'd also question the language of 4.14 of improving. Again, improving is in the eye of the beholder, which what you say is that you will tax anything that improves your appearance. But my question is, who would be the arbiter to decide whether or not it improved your appearance or not? If Representative Rukavina had the procedure to look like me that he suggested, I'd argue that that doesn't necessarily improve his appearance at all. I think it's you're biting off a lot with the language that you've chosen here.
Representative Cobb.
Madam Chairman, I think the answer is that we're not the first. New Jersey has now had 1 or 2 years of experience with this, and again, obviously, and they've collected $11 million. Now, one of the arguments that was made was that New Jersey, when they proposed the bill, had projected a return of $22 million, and so the return was well below forecast, half, $11 million. But they've managed to collect $11 million with as good a set of lawyers as I imagine we have in Minnesota arguing all of these loopholes, and I do believe this is specifically taken from the New Jersey language. If it needs to be tightened or loosened or fixed in any way, I think, you know, cosmetic surgery, it's kind of like people say about art, that you know it when you see it. I think cosmetic surgery as opposed to necessary surgery is the same thing. You know it when you see it. You see a grossly deforming birthmark on someone's face, I think you know that that's the kind of thing where you want to talk about a more normal appearance to go through life as such. When you talk about toxin, lip injections and that kind of thing, I think you fully understand that that's not something that we're talking about for a more normal appearance. And this has just been a dramatically increasing industry.
We have Representative Liebling, Hillstrom, and Simpson, and then we want to go to the last on the agenda still, so Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and actually I had exactly the same issue as Representative Atkins, and frankly, Representative Kahn, I don't think that you've totally allayed my concern about that because, you know, just because somebody else is doing it, and, you know, I certainly don't want us to get into a full employment for lawyers bill here, much as I like lawyers.
Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman, Representative Liebling, I just meant that there's got to be something that we can look at to see what cases were brought up and to see what exceptions they needed to make and so forth, not saying that we needed to do it just because they did it. And as I said, I think there are some things that we will easily all agree with a cosmetic surgery, and there are other things that form on the borderline, and for you guys who do taxes, that must come up all the time with things that you put taxes on. So, you know, it's just another way to make those decisions.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would assume that many of these items already have Minnesota Care tax on them, and so if you were to add sales tax to this as well, how would that work together? If I could get clarification from staff.
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Hillstrom, yes, the Minnesota Care tax would generally apply to the revenues that are received by the provider for performing these procedures, and so the provider would be obligated to pay the 2% Minnesota Care tax and would presumably build that into the fees that they charge, and then the 6.5% would apply to that amount. There is an amendment that's in members' packets that would sort of reverse that by providing an exemption for these procedures from the Minnesota Care tax and then redirect some of the sales tax revenue to the Health Care Access Fund. So if you're concerned about having this revenue taxed under both taxes, you could adopt that amendment to sort of to prevent that from happening.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one other question. I'm curious as to some of these items might be covered, for example, by insurance, and some are not. And so I don't know who I would even ask how that would work, because I would assume that insurance companies would not pay the sales tax or would not approve that as part of the bill. I mean, maybe they would. So then would insurance cover that piece, and then the person would then be responsible for paying the sales tax? I'm just trying to figure out how in real life this might work.
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I think the only thing you could fairly say is it depends upon the health insurance policy. My instinct would be that in most cases this would be just then a cost of the procedure, and if health insurance covers it, subject to deductibles, co-payments, and whatever else, I would think it would be covered, but you know, it could be specified in the individual policy, obviously, and it might not be covered, but my instinct would be that, you know, if it's covered, it, you know, would apply as part of the charge for the procedure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Simpson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. In my good friend, Representative Rukavina, left, but in my years sitting on the tax committee, I continue to hear when we talk sales tax, we talk about regressiveness. So now I don't know if this is considered regressive because of income levels that would of the people using this or not. But at what point do we start and stop expanding the sales tax? And that's exactly what we're looking at doing here, just expanding the sales tax. And I would hope that the chair would hold this over for very for possible exclusion. And at this point, the way I see it, looks like we have one state that's doing it, and I just don't think we really need to be out there with the rest of the states quite so quickly. Just my comment.
Thank you, Representative Simpson. We've got possible inclusion on the table now. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I have a question about tattoos. And it's a very serious one, in that a number of years ago when I was actually teaching, I helped staff the Twin Cities Task Force on Gangs. And one of the things they were trying to do was encourage kids that had gang symbols and so on tattooed on their bodies to get those tattoos, I think through laser type surgery, removed. Now, how would you interpret the sales tax on that? Is that to achieve a normal appearance? Because there are people who have other kinds of tattoos that, you know, aren't, let's say, gang related or don't have a negative connotation.
Well, have some kind.
Again, Madam Chairman, I know one of the things that we might be able to look to for some guidance is what health insurance policies do pay for, or what, you know, if I'm asked to be king and make decisions, I would say yes, that's a necessary, you know, that's a necessary cost that ought not be covered by the sales tax. And I'd also like to answer Representative Simpson, is that every once in a while, I think that a regressive tax can be made more progressive by how you apply it. And in this case, there are one of the statements that I've made is that there aren't a lot of homeless people, but there aren't a lot of people who can't afford money for food who are getting cosmetic surgery. So I think a sales tax that's applied to people who are clearly at an upper income level becomes a more progressive rather than a regressive form of that tax.
To that point, Madam Chair.
Representative Simpson.
Well, Representative Kahn, on the handout that you handed out here, you've got a quote from a surgeon who says 90% of the plastic surgery patients are female with annual incomes averaging about $60,000. So I don't think I'd call that above high income earnings. And I certainly agree with you that homeless people aren't doing this, but I don't think the dollars are as great as you think.
We're going to go back to Representative Carlson, but for clarification for Representative Kahn, I don't think she knows this is in here. I have it in here because I thought the committee might want to know that this is in the news today.
Okay.
And it's Representative Kahn's bill, and it's being picked up by the AP. And I do think these items are controversial and complicated. But I also think the committee, particularly those who have been on the committee, knows for a while that one of the most difficult issues facing the state of Minnesota is its eroding sales tax base. And the real reason that's happening is we're not taxing services, and then we're exempting a lot of things that aren't services. And I thought it would be a good exercise for the committee to think about one that actually is not an exemption, as Representative Kahn said, but is in fact adding something in, and just to think about how some of the least controversial things probably in the whole sales tax arena are complicated. So whether it was this service or any other service, these are the kind of questions that we'd have to work long and hard with staff and the Department of Revenue to think it through. But I do think members are going to have to spend time thinking about what legislature is going to have the guts to expand that sales tax base that is eroding and dwindling and actually decrease all the exemptions that keep passing. If you go and read the tax expenditure book, it's a shopper's catalog of who gets a tax exemption. And while it's fun to give those to people and it feels good, it's actually creating a very long-term and very serious problem in the Minnesota tax code as sales tax base just keeps getting smaller. And I think that probably the best way to do some of these things, just personally, is to maybe take a look again at what Governor Ventura was trying to do. I think he did a lot of things wrong. He was trying to tax inputs, and he was doing a lot of business pyramiding, but if you set that aside and have the debate about bringing everything back into the sales tax and actually lowering the rate, so you've got a revenue-neutral change going on in the tax system, you could really, for the long-term, plan for Minnesota. So I think it's instructive when members are willing to bring forward how do we start folding in services, and certainly ones that might be perceived as a little more progressive than others, and just to kind of watch the committee reaction. But I think Representative Carlson had the floor on this. Did you have further on the tattoos?
I think she had answered it in part that they probably would not be taxed in the situation that I described, but I suspect others might be. It's probably kind of a thing that needs some clarification as you move forward. But the point is that when I was dealing with the gang issue, most of the they were mainly, I think, almost all these young men that they were talking about, but young people that would have those kinds of tattoos, the removal of those is quite expensive.
Yeah.
And you're adding one more burden to that. In fact, sometimes it takes several treatments before they can totally remove those tattoos. But I'll stop there and just say that
Madam,
could be an issue.
Thank you. Well, we have three more questions, and we still have Representative Roosevelt, and we've got 14 minutes. Representative Zellers.
Minor quick, Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Kahn on 425 there, Stephen Blagrave, and I'm hoping in you mean the outside ones, the spider, not the varicose, that can be dangerous from health facilities. I've had family members that they take them off the blood clot and just make sure.
I'm sure, you know, again, the language that we have in there, I'm sure that that's nothing that's medically necessary. I do believe it has to do with, I would imagine it would mean advanced nose treatment and that kind of thing. And that was mainly done with sand.
Okay.
I saw that.
Thank you. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Moving on in the article, was in there, this article says that the doctor said it hurts working women who save up their money and work hard and try to do something for themselves once in a while. I think Representative Kahn is at serious risk here. She's long been a champion of women's rights and other affairs, but and I think this would be a real reversal of previous positions that you've taken, Representative Kahn. All we've done to advance women's issues, I'm surprised we don't have a lot of men here testifying against you, or against us well.
Representative Kahn.
Just very briefly.
Are you anti-women, Representative Kahn?
Yes, yes. My first question about tattoos would be, do we tax them going on? I don't know. It just shows my lack of knowledge about tax things. And then the next point I would like to point out to Representative Earhart. We want to do something that's really helpful for people's health and self-esteem and well-being. We would go look at the existing law where we're taxing spas and athletic facilities and all of those other things. So we've already made the decision that we're willing to put taxes on things that we consider, you know, somewhat, I don't want to say frivolous, but we consider we're willing to put taxes on things that aren't essential to people's lives. And I think I would advise the person who wants to, who's worried, whose decision is being made because of the 6% sales tax on that's not on for liposuction but is on when they go to a spa or a health facility, I would suggest that they reverse that thought.
Well, Madam Chair, I think it should be to the individual who decides what it does for their self-esteem, whether it be a spa or shaving their head or a liposuction.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, I just pointed out that the tax code is not neutral. The tax code taxes going to the spa and the health club and the facility and going to run, you know, multiple laps at the athletic club, but it doesn't tax liposuction. And I'm just saying that we put those more on a balanced fund.
Madam Chair, I was just thinking that Vicki Smith isn't bad looking even with her head change.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be really quick. Representative Kahn, have you given any thought to, or do you know, like, how many of these procedures are done by people coming in from out of state? And the question that I'm really asking is, doesn't this create, or does it create, a competitiveness issue for any large institution that may do a lot of these kinds of procedures in the state?
I want to be cognizant, and I think that's the Mayo question done very nicely.
Madam Chairman, why do I somehow believe that the Mayo Clinic's reputation does not rest on how many of these procedures it does, nor does its financial statement rest on how many of these procedures it does? But that's the, I think if we're looking about that, let them go to get these done in South Dakota or North Dakota or wherever.
And Representative Leland and Jim, while we do have one more bill to hear.
One thing. Those are fighting words, Representative.
Thank you for that. And Representative Conner, I'm going to go ahead and lay over your bill then. House File 1020 for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative
Conner. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Representative Rood, thanks for your patience. And Representative Rood has brought testifiers, members. This is a bill that affects all firefighters in the state of Minnesota, and so we want to quick get it in here. Representative Rood, is there a member who would like to move Representative Rood's bill? I don't have the House file number in front of me. Oh, yes. Thank you. Representative Paulson will move House file. It's the XXX file, members. We don't have a number on the bill yet, but Representative Paulson moves this bill. And members, we don't have a House file number yet, but Representative Rood talked to me about this briefly, and it had not, I think there's been a little hold up maybe with the revisers and getting some bills, and because we were doing some exemptions today, we did want to hear this one, and this is important to all of the members across the state. And so, Representative Rood, if you wanted to explain your bill to us.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It's good to be back. As you may know, fire departments are exempt from sales tax for the purchase of certain items, and this bill would just like to extend that. And I am going to keep my comments brief because I have some very important testifiers here today, and we've been hanging on every word that you guys have been saying. So, with that,
thank you, Representative Rood. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill really addresses three key items for the fire service, and that would be one is currently the tax exemption is only for tools when they're sold in conjunction with a fire truck. So I have to buy the fire truck from the manufacturer fully loaded with all the hose, axes, etc., in order to gain the tax exemption on those things that are on the truck. All the manufacturers know this. They know what our rate of taxation is in the state of Minnesota, and so they're able to raise the overall price of those tools just up underneath the threshold of what our sales tax is. So in effect, I'm actually paying more for those tools. And as an example, probably the average cost of the hose, tools, and whatnot that comes on your basic standard fire truck is somewhere in the $40,000 to $45,000 range. So that's a big factor for us when we're talking about paying maybe five plus percent too much for that, for those materials. Secondly, this would extend the sales tax exemption that's already available to ambulances for things like oxygen, bandages, those kinds of things which fire departments also consume in the normal course of their daily business serving our communities. And third, it would also exempt certain other vehicles that are currently our tax, for instance, boats, rescue boats, snowmobiles, ATVs, things that you might not commonly think of that are used by fire departments but are when we're fighting wildland fires, doing business on our lakes and waterways.
Thank you. Can we get your name off
the
tape?
Oh, I'm sorry. George Espenson. I'm the fire chief for Eden Prairie.
Thank you very much, and thank you for being here. And we would like to hear from your other testifiers as well, but I want to just amend Representative Paulson. Motion, we're going to, just so it's clear for the tape, it's the 072302 revisor's number so we can reference it later. We don't have a bill number yet. Thank you, Representative Paulson, and thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Joe Wallen, and I serve as the fire chief for the city of Minnetonka. And, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'd like to just point out two things. Usually when we purchase a piece of fire apparatus, the life of that apparatus is in excess of 30 years that we have that. By the time we are done with that piece of equipment, virtually everything on it has had to been replaced several times over. So the intent of having tax-free tools for our trucks is only able to gain that once, and then over the life of the vehicle we have to pay several times over to replace those items. Second of all, I'd like to point out that this is also very critical in the greater Minnesota, as a smaller departments are doing fundraisers to buy much of their equipment, that this just adds more cost to that equipment. We'd like to help those outlying departments get more equipment for their vehicles.
Thank you for that. Questions, members? Representative Solberg.
I'm sure I think that's probably true for the fire trucks, that there's a 30-year life expectancy, but that's not necessarily true for some things such as boats that are used. And I think that in the law enforcement community, and I know fire trucks do that as well, there are boats that are used and then they are sold every couple of years to upgrade their boats. So I want to know a little bit about, you know, where the funds go when that boat is sold. And then do we extend that sales tax again?
Chief, did you, or Representative?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative. I can speak for the city of Minnetonka, and we recently replaced one of our boats after 20 years of service. That boat went to auction, a government auction, where those funds were then put back into the general fund to the city.
Representative
Solberg. Madam Chair, I think that's the kind of the exception for it to be 20 years old, my experience, but I might be mistaken on that.
Yes. Madam Chair and Representative Solberg, in Eden Prairie, we just recently replaced our boat as well, and it was 21 years old. We just replaced it last year. And I also happen to know that in this fire district in Greenwood, Minnesota, on Lake Vermilion, they just replaced a boat that was 14 years old, and the only reason they did was because it encountered some difficulty during a midnight search. So I think, at least in the fire service, I can only speak to that. Most of our equipment, we do schedule 20 years plus, just because of the nature of the financial impact of replacing stuff rapidly.
Thank you. Other questions, members? Well, if with that, I thank all of the committee for their time and attention today and all the authors. I know that, you know, we've had a good discussion because of Representative De La Forest about how we wish we weren't taxing local units of government on the sales tax at all. There have been a number of exemptions and fire trucks are in, but you're trying to bring us more, and we will definitely take that into consideration, and I will lay over this House file, and with that, we are adjourned.